hunger, the next house lost, the next child, the last ounce, until all that's left is defiance and chipped flint.
He took on Helica's hand, scrambled past saguaros, flowered red, that stood like ancient wall paintings of Aztec teachers from whose mouths flowed the sacred words that showed the difference between the true artist and the carrion artist who cheats the people with lies. They climbed to a cave opening, then fell into a pool inside, splashing faces, rolling onto their backs, reading names scrawled on cave walls until his eyes closed. He was walking down a dry wash under an autumn sun with Don Antonio and Eusebia. They climbed a barranca studded with agave, cactus, cholla, mesquite brush, where orange butterflies sipped nectars from ocotillos. Don Antonio winked at David.
They come from El Norte, like tourists to mate. See how they dance like ballerinas? On their wings is painted the faces of their souls. Every sunset of their brief lives, every generation back to the first butterflies. The ancient ones saw them as angels of nature, carrying off souls of the dying, in their pitcher writing the teacher's lesson, his carnations blooming from his mouth. Colossal sorcerers fell during the conquest. They were titans. We are ants in comparison. Are you ready to take the power to destroy and create?
I want the most perfect one. I'll gild it, mount it on a pin, and make a golden necklace out of it for Eusebia.
Circle up the arroyo and flush them down so we can make the capture.
It's a good plan.
What's an old man for, if not to teach his grandson the tricks men have known since the earth was still wet?
David scrambles up, gets behind the butterfly.
Ay, ay!
And as they flutter down the dusty draw, Eusebia cries,
"Oh my God!"
He runs back down. Don Antonio lies, clutching his chest, face purple. Eusebia kneels beside him, smiling down into his face. Already beyond help, Don Antonio pulls David with his last strength down so he can whisper in his ear.
Bring back the titans, David. Bring back the age of the giants.
100 butterflies cluster around his face.
Hands up, you son of a bitch.
Is that what they pay you for?
Shut up.
Or what?
Angelica picked up the machete, smacking the policeman with the flat side across his neck.
Look what you have done. You blinded him. For God's sake, he's a painter.
The Chilean consulate, night.
Siqueiros's wounded eyes made out an old servant in white jacket leading him, Angelica, and Adriana into a room lit by a green-shaded lamp. A figure rose, like a bear, standing on its hind legs.
Hello. My name is Neruda. Pablo Neruda. Is that David Siqueiros wearing a priest's hat?
Sorry for the getup, but my family...
I wish we could have met under better circumstances, but we're communists. What can we expect?
A one-way ticket out.
Underwear and my beat-up integrity. Angelica, you're as beautiful as I've heard. David, the Judas Trotsky is less injured than you. And what you thought was going to happen to him will now happen to you, my friend.
All I need is a wall to paint.
These will get you to Chile by way of Cuba and Bolivia.
Gracias, Pablo.
I never thought I'd hug a priest.
Mountain road at Snowline, the Andes.
The Mexicano consul Hector Martinez left us off, turned his car around, and headed back to the city below, leaving us trudging, one foot in front of the other, calf-deep in snow towards a mountain pass with raincoats, blankets, surgical masks.
Into a whiteout, no shadow, the sun, a milky disk above fists of sleet, pounding them every step until they stumbled into a cave mouth and a supper of frozen chocolate bars. The squall screwed itself into the ice. The setting sun threw down long red rays, a dance of fiery veils arcing toward night, a sea of radium lava in the blood, casting vague shapes on cave walls, condensed to stars in the bowl of night. Siqueiros looked around him and above at the low-ceilinged cave, surrounded by the glow of sunset.
This is what I always wanted.
To live in a cave?
Siqueiros picked Adriana up in his arms.
The first paintings are in caves.
He laid a blanket on the cave floor for me, then leaned on the wall to watch the snow swirl churn to pink sculpted dunes. He saw himself there, a single flake blown among billions into the impasse of mountain spires. He knelt, exhausted, as the last flare burst upon the peaks. He raised his head and arms. All his life he had dreamed of the people free. He knew now it wouldn't happen in his lifetime.
I see it now. The shrine I always wanted to create. The monument to those in the future.
He stood, and with the light left, he began moving his arm, sketching shapes, inscribing on the cave like he was fixing in his muscles the curving line of forms. Women pruning the tree of life, men carrying babies, their bodies at peace in the eternal march of humanity.
Polyforum, Sunday afternoon, May 1974.
Fathers in white shirts and striped ties, mothers in Sunday dresses gone to mass, and this afternoon, admission free. They have entered the immense cave to be swallowed by images flickering on its walls.
If you bend back, you can see an astronaut and a cosmonaut up on the ceiling.
What are they doing?
I think they are opening the future.
A golden gyre spinning destiny from dynamos Siqueiros first imagined in Central Park many years before, throbbing. Woom, woom, woom. Its spires and spindles, source and center of celestial hummingbirds. And at eye level, those who hastened to join the storm were some spirit ready to attack as they sleep beneath the poisoned tree. The people surrounded by its walls, a mother as she looks up whispering.
Él debe haber tenido una mente brillante y un espíritu de paz.
Through every barrier, humanity marches across an earth spinning into the dark rift. A humanity that was once bound, their silent voices raised despite the coils that tighten around them. And the viewers spend a Sunday afternoon among the ghostly gods as outside an old peasant leads a burro through the street-lit rain.
Spiral shells in the Black Palace. Prison.
Siqueiros woke, then swung his legs over the side of the bunk, scratched his ribs, smoothed his feathery hair.
Have you heard the young Norteamericano president was shot in the head?
I'm surprised.
That they blew his brains out?
That they didn't do it sooner.
You're a short timer, aren't you?
See?
What you gonna do when you get out?
Ever heard of Manuel Suarez y Suarez?
Rich guy, isn't he?
He's building a big hotel right here in Mexico. And there's going to be another building called the Poliforum that's going to be one huge painting by me.
A match flash illuminated his lined face. His father's silver crucifix glinted on his denim shirt. Moonlight through his barred window threw a shadow on two paintings on his wall. One, his portrait of Angelica, her skin white Castilian rose, arms like Athena's, solacing breasts, green eyes that held nothing back, her red lips just about to whisper.
I remember the fiesta in white, green, red stripes of crepe strung on brick walls of Los Angelino restaurant. Christmas lights hanging from street lamps, young families dancing.
He drew a line of fresh white acrylic onto a palette as cigarette smoke stung his eyes, made him squint as ashes fell. He smiled them in with a toothbrush palette knife, coughed, applied another stroke to a self-portrait, his hand nail scratching the fourth wall between him and whoever, whatever dared stand between himself and himself just beyond, ripping through whatever kept him begging the question of inside or outside, that kept him revising Angelica's impossible beauty, elusive as freedom behind bars, secret as dreams that told him prison is not about space. He knew the freedom he sought would not occur in his lifetime. Again, he reached into his magician's hat for the sketch pad and charcoal to limn out a man with a phantom twin blooming from his sternum. He stopped measuring the dimensions of his cell. He began sketching spirits, ghosts, prophecies. Stars hung like hummingbirds above trumpet vines. The blossom arrived. A streak of lightning revealed the musculature of clouds, and he remembered that barkeep in Barcelona and imagined him walking home through scattered gunfire as he entered his kitchen, pulled the light cord, saw a cricket under his table.
And that was the second half of Magician's Hat, a radio play adapted from Magician's Hat, poem Siqueiros by Bill Tremblay. A couple credits I should announce. Steve Wolf was the announcer. Bill Tremblay was the narrator. Sammy Salas was David Alfaro Siqueiros. And then other performers, their parts to Myriad Dimension. Carol de Rueda, Jack Mano, Brian Hull, Mark Sanchez, Paul Gessler, Ralph Krock-Berndorf, Richard Bylack, Cynthia Tremblay, John Waples, Chloe Leisure, Jim Abraham, Holly Johnson, Zoe Johnson, Rebecca Robson May, and Markham Rouge was Pablo Neruda. And I have a couple announcements, and then I will be playing part of a interview with the author, Bill Tremblay. I just want to announce a couple events. This Sunday at 5 p.m., there's a reading with Ross Robbins, who's been on KBOO before. He was on Talking Earth before. Martha Grover and Emily Kendall Fry. That's at Valentine's in downtown Portland. Next Monday night at Three Friends Coffee House, a show and tell gallery production, working artists assembly interviews with Nathan Tompkins, who is a poet and the author of the chapbook Junk Mail of the Heart. Next Friday, January 31st at 7 p.m. Working Artists Assembly is at 7 p.m. at Three Friends Coffee House, Southeast 12th and Ash, next Monday. And there's events there every week. And open mic to follow at 8:15 every Monday. Friday, January 31st at 7 p.m., Them's Fighting Words, the Frozen Earth edition at St. John's Booksellers and St. John's in Portland. Monday, February 3rd, reading at Tony's, the first Monday of the month at Tony's Tavern in downtown, or not downtown, it is downtown Portland. And there is also an open mic and a feature event at Three Friends Coffee House that night as well. Friday, February 7th, Ink Noise Review, Triple Shot, Araya Talakun, I'm pronouncing her name wrong, I'm sure, Pagos B, who's hilarious, has been on the Talking Earth before, as has Sarah Weigel, are all performing, they're all featuring, and then they have invites as well. And I believe that is all the announcements I have. So I'm going to try to get to the interview. And one mention that this is, I did edit this, so I kind of moved something to the front so it could, Bill Tremblay thought it was very important to talk about the language of the play. So we're going to start with that.
The thing I'm most hopeful of in regard to the CD is, and by the way, I should mention that the CD is available through CD Baby, which is out in Portland near the airport.
This is the voice of
Bill Tremblay. Airport Boulevard
And it's also, it's easily available online through CD Baby.
Yes, and through Amazon, where you can buy individual cuts. But enough of commercial. What I'm interested to talk about is the language, you know, because the thing is that it's easy for the language to get lost because of the dynamism of the subject, you know. I mean, you've got this great painter, and he's also this committed revolutionary artist, and you know, a lover and a fighter, and you know, and all of that. So the thing is that the language of the book and the language of, especially of the narrative portion of the CD, is very carefully crafted to echo Siqueiros' visual style, so that every line is highly visual. And at the same time, there's a sonic level that's operating in the pure music. Okay, there's kind of like the canción comes in, it kind of creeps in certain sections, and suddenly there's a kind of swelling music, and the syntax of the sentences is reflective of these large group assemblage type mural paintings, where when you look at them, you realize, as if you look long enough, that there's a kind of visual grammar. There's a visual syntax. Like, why is this historic president placed next to this murderer? Why is this woman placed next to this horse? And so on. You see what I'm saying?
That, yes, that,
definitely. That in order to understand the relationships that are that have been painted onto the wall or onto the canvas. You know, sometimes you have to know. You know, you have to know why
the background.
It's funny that this particular woman is placed by this particular horse. You know, but you know, what I'm saying is that the craft, the art of the book, the poetry, and the spoken word can easily be overlooked.
Especially because, in something like this.
You know, of the I've had a couple of reviews that have been published, and one of them is all about you know, the difference between, let's say, you know, various ideological forms of communism. As if, you know, the reviewer thought that the important thing was to make these distinctions intellectually.
When really what you're doing is you're writing the life of a person and...
And I'm making him a flawed human being.
Well, he was a flawed human being. You're being honest,
right?
And
I'm not trying to glorify violence.
No. Well,
I'm just in. You know, I'm trying to suggest that Siqueiros came out of the Spanish Civil War as a colonel leading an artillery battery, a battalion, and that by the time he made it back to Mexico City, he was suffering post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Wow, I didn't realize that, but that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I mean, he was literally not himself. And what happened was that things built and built and built, and they just got out of hand. He did a stupid thing.
Yeah.
He shot up a man's house. But, I mean, think about it.
It's not the entirety of his life.
Right. I mean, not only that, but if you think about it from the point of view of fiction or of movies or whatever, the conflict, the violence, it's all stupid in a way. I mean, even Shakespeare, I mean, you watch or you read Richard III, this is not a nice man.
Well, that was part of the point of Richard III, I guess, because he wasn't trying to be honest there.
He wasn't, yeah. And that was
a character assassination.
But he was a monster in certain ways.
Yeah, well.
I mean, he had two children killed.
Yeah, but
but you see what I'm saying?
Oh.
It doesn't just because there is a guy who commits a violent act doesn't mean that I'm trying to create a role model. It's a character.
Not only a character. I mean, it was a real human being. It's a character
yeah.
based on a. And you are honest, as opposed to, again, Richard III, where he exaggerated aspects of his life.
You know, the whole thing is that it's difficult to separate Siqueiros from his passion, you know, which was to be an experimental artist who pioneered the use of acrylics in painting, and who was trying, therefore, to be relevant. In other words, the whole idea of the muralist movement was that they would get away from the Renaissance fresco method and instead use more industrial methods of the 20th century. I mean, acrylics are essentially car paint.
Yeah, that's actually
pioneered by DuPont.
Which,
and they, you know, especially Cicados, used
spray painting in some
spray
ways.
Spray painting, yes. I was, you know, searching for the word because it's kind of like the guys who do like detail work on you know, cars that have all kinds of wonderful designs on them.
Yeah,
you know?
that would be a good way to what compare it to. But
unfortunately, that's all we're going to be able to listen to the interview. I'd like to thank Bill Tremblay for spending the time to talk with me, and it was a great pleasure playing Magician's Hat. I hope everyone enjoyed it out there. Those who heard it, if not, you can read up on Sigueros' life. There's several books about him in the library, including, and you can find his paintings online. And Magician's Hat, as Bill Tremblay said, is available on CD Baby. Also, his book is also available at Powell's and Amazon. And we're signing off for the Talking Earth. Walt Curtis will be hosting next month.
KBOO Portland, community radio for the Pacific Northwest. Stay tuned at midnight for Joe Woods and the Tiki Cha-Cha Club. Right now, the following program may contain language and situations not suitable for young audiences. But of course, it's the bedtime radio show for grown-ups, Gremlin Time.
Oh, good evening. This is Fortunato, and this is Gremlin Time. I am looking up some background information on tonight's story. And I'm typing in here to Wikipedia. Do you want to answer that? Some fan mail from some flounder. Someone's calling here. Talk to a young lad. Tonight we're going to present a story that was originally written in Polish. No, I'm sorry. The author was from Poland. There's a count, Jan Patocki. He lived from 1761 to 1815. This story is called The Manuscript Found in Saragossa. This was sort of like a continued, you know, sort of a serialized story from back then and late. Well, actually, this was first published in 1805, the section that we're going to read today, the first couple of chapters. And then that was like put aside, and then a couple of years later, he wrote the rest of it where this gypsy tells this story. And then it's like a story within a story, like somebody stops and tells a story. And then within that story, somebody stops and tells another story. And then story upon story. And then at one point, the stories kind of fold in on each other. It's an amazing book. And it was turned into an amazing movie. I just before I get any farther here, John, the book was left unfinished. The author committed suicide in 1815. And so it's a big book, and it was done in an amazing movie in 1965 in Poland. And you can find it at the Multnomah County Library, my favorite place to go, as well as our fantastic video store movie called The Saragossa Manuscript. And so for tonight, we're going to read the first couple of chapters from that book. The Saragossa Manuscript. The first day.